TFM.
Welcome, Boomers, to another episode of Warp 5, our dedicated Enterprise podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, I'm really looking forward to our discussion today. Hopefully we haven't had it before.
Have we? Chris?
Wait. Hold on a second.
I don't really remember a lot since there was. So I remember you asked me, if I recall correctly, you asked me to do a show called Literary Treks.
Yeah, Matthew, that was 13 years ago.
Oh my. Okay.
That's the last thing you remember. Okay.
Oh man. Yes.
Well, this is going to be interesting if we both have parasites in our heads. We're going to continue our 20th anniversary rewatch of Enterprise today with episode 8 of season 3. This is Twilight, and here's a quick rundown of the story. As anomalies in the Delphic Expanse rock the Enterprise, T'Pol is trapped under debris and Archer works to rescue her. Although he pulls her out just in time, another wave smacks him head-on and knocks him out. Even worse, the wave deposits interspatial parasites in his hippocampus. He is also left with anterograde amnesia, leaving him without the ability to form long-term memories. One morning, he awakes to find that he's been shacking up with T'Pol for the past 12 years, that he has a Vulcan haircut, and that the Zindi conflict is over. And Earth lost. So, Matthew, it's one of my favorite. I'll just go ahead and say off the bat, this isn't Final Thoughts. One of my favorite episodes of Enterprise and Star Trek, because I think it's a clever concept that not only shows us extreme character growth for the character of T'Pol, it also, by encapsulating the entire Zindi conflict arc and showing us a possible outcome, it really, I feel like, helps ground the whole storyline for the season so that we're more invested in what's going to happen in the upcoming episodes.
I couldn't agree with you more, Chris. I think, you know, just overall, the episode is so well done. And I think, like you said, the thing that really makes this stand out is that if we didn't already have an understanding of how important this mission is and how precariously it, you know, sits on the edge of a knife and how important possibly even just one person could be to this. This episode really kind of sets the stage, and I really love when Star Trek episodes do that. And what's, you know, most fascinating, obviously, about this episode is that this is the first time that Star Trek has ever done an entire season for one storyline. Obviously, you know, we've had Deep Space Nine do a lot of continuity, a lot of connection, and yet this is the first time an entire season has been one continuous story. And I think what makes this most interesting is that out of 24 episodes, this is episode 8, and this is a statement episode for the season of saying, this could go horribly and utterly wrong. And so to do that, like you said, I think it does kind of ramp up the tension for every single episode coming up. And the most interesting thing about Enterprise, right, is none of these characters, we know what their history is. So at any moment, any of these characters could die in service of the story if they want them to. And so it puts that in perspective, I think, as well. And so I couldn't agree with you more. I think, you know, even rewatching the episode as I was this evening before we started recording, it's such an emotionally driven episode. And a big part of that is all of the performances. But before we even talk about DePaul, I think I just have to call out, you know, Jolene and her performance here is so beautiful. It's so well done. It pulls you in, and she has, you know, I was watching, I think, The Center Seat, and they were talking about the creation of Enterprise, and that one of the things that was interesting is at the beginning of the first season, you know, they kind of had given her an acting coach because she really hadn't done a lot of acting. And yet, very quickly, to me, she becomes wonderful. But by this episode, she understands this character inside and out, and she understands exactly what to do with her face and her body to create the entire character, to which she doesn't have to overreact to make you feel what DePaul as a character is feeling and what's going on inside of her mind, because she actually says very little as a character, even in this episode. So,
but it's her face, right?
Exactly.
But in subtle ways.
It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Scott Bakula's performance in this episode, I think, is one of his best as Archer as well.
I agree.
And Scott Bakula, at this point in his career, was a very well-known, experienced actor. He's a great actor. And so for someone like Jolene Blaylock, who doesn't have that acting background, to play off of Bakula so well in this episode, I think, again, just speaks volumes to the skill that she has, like just a natural ability that she has to bring this character to life. So yeah, it's a really excellent performance. And the two of them together, there's so much action in the story surrounding the conflict, but the part of the story that always sticks with me is the two of them together and the quiet moments where she's helping him remember, or maybe she's not helping him remember really, because he's going to forget again in a few minutes, but telling him the story of what happened. And it highlights how far her character has come. So she was a reluctant member. She was belligerent in the office at the beginning of the series in Broken Bow. She was a reluctant member of the crew. And then in this episode, she's leading the crew. And she's also pushing back against Saval and how Vulcans are viewing humans. I mean, she tells him, like, you know, we held them back. She's really pushing back against her people. And then on a personal level, you can see just how much she has come to care for Archer and respect him. Of course, she feels a duty to him because he saved her life. But I think it's much more than that. I think that you can see that she's really grown to admire him as a person. And it's now it's a 12-year time span within the story.
Right.
But compressing that down and showing us a starting point and then an end point here, it gives us a really interesting look at character growth for DePaul.
Yeah, I mean, something about this episode that I think is incredibly smart is that it very much acknowledges that there was a group of fans who wanted these characters to be together. Mm-hmm. And it allows them to explore that for those two characters and what that might look like. Aside from that, though, like you said, I think this highlights the fact that the character of T'Pol has clearly become a member of this Starfleet crew in a way that she would have never thought possible at the beginning of the show. And it goes to show, I think, as well, how she has come to care for these humans, and especially Archer. And I think the beauty of that is that moment in which she experiences one of the most human of attributes, right? Which is Archer willing to lay down his life for his friend.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's why the Bible verses, you know, no greater love has this than a man who lays down his life for others. And she experiences that, and it has a monumental impact on her life. And there is a seismic shift then mm-hmm. in how she feels about these characters, these human people, but obviously specifically Archer. And then the way in which she is incredibly angry at her own people for not doing more to help them. And I mean, that's the thing that I find about this episode to be so interesting is that we truly are taking into account all of the work that we've been doing over three seasons. And Mike Sussman, I think, really understands the internal logic of all of these characters. And it shows then in this episode, especially in which I think all of them react, right? I mean, you see the way Trip is reacting. He reacts to T'Pol in anger for what she did to try and save the ship and the predicament that it puts them in. But then you see the way in which he's kind of mellowed out and changed a little bit in the sense that he's now the captain. And there's just all of this stuff that happens for all of these different characters, right? And I think it's really, really well done. But the highlight of the episode truly is T'Pol's journey. And you couple that, like you said, with the portrayal that we get from Jolene and from Scott, it's they're on the top of their game in this episode, and they bring it in every single scene, and it makes it really wonderful, actually, because without that, you know, I think this episode is consistently written in the sense that it's very consistent in its tone, and it's compact in the sense that it's very well thought out in its internal logic. All of those writing aspects are great. And it would be a good episode, but what makes it, spoiler alert, a great episode is the fact that everybody is putting 100% of themselves on the line with their characters to make you really feel what these characters are going through. And that's, I mean, just something special, man.
Yeah. Absolutely. So as we talk about T'Pol and Archer and how that relationship has grown, and there's that one moment where T'Pol tells Archer that our relationship has evolved over the years, and Archer asks her how much has it evolved, and she just kind of looks at him and doesn't reveal anything. The origins of this story are interesting because Mike Sussman originally pitched this to Voyager as a love story between Janeway and Chakotay. And Janeway would have been the one who was afflicted with the parasites, and Chakotay would have been the one who was caring for her. Now, the extent to which that will parallel what happens here in terms of the timeline and all, I don't know the details of, but... The idea that it would have been Janeway and Chakotay is interesting. Now, he couldn't get the Voyager writers and producers to bite on this idea and decided to turn it into an Enterprise story using the Zindi conflict backdrop as the thread to tie it all together, which I think works beautifully. And I'm not sure how this would have really worked on Voyager. I mean, I can picture the concept of the story on Voyager, but it wouldn't have the grandiose stakes that it has that we see here.
You know, I think that you could have absolutely done this as a Voyager story. In fact, it's interesting, you know, when you put this on the outline, and I did not realize that this was something that they had thought of. And in that, I had immediately thought to myself as I was watching this episode, you know, this seems like in so many ways the thing that they were going for in Resolutions, mm-hmm. which was, okay, we are going to give those fans what they've asked for, but in some ways, but we're also going to shut the door on this storyline in the sense of we're never really going to go there. Mm-hmm. And so I think it would actually have been really fascinating to do this as a Voyager episode, because you could have done this thing where almost like, I mean, and what this boils down to is this is actually Endgame, mm-hmm. right? And that by doing that story, then it would have played out in some ways like that, where it's like the quest then becomes maybe we change the future basically by Janeway being alive and us getting home is different, you know? Mm-hmm. So I could absolutely see this play out. Now, the one thing I would mention is that I think one of the reasons this might have gotten denied is that
there's no monkey in it.
There's no monkey in it.
Okay.
No, I think the reason this got denied, one of the reasons this might have gotten denied is that people might have been uncomfortable with the idea of Janeway and Chakotay maybe having some sort of relationship beyond. To Paul's intonation here, seems as though she's implying there's some sort of physical relationship that has happened between mm-hmm. her and Archer at this
That's
point.
That's what I took from the look right. and Same. The lack of an answer.
Right.
And then later when Phlox asks her, have you told him how
yes,
you feel about
exactly.
him? Exactly. Right? Yeah.
For that to happen between Chakotay and Janeway, where she's the one who's lost her memory, I can hear the fans yeah, in an uproar right now.
Point. Yeah.
And
yeah.
so I think yep. that's the reason why maybe this episode plays better in the Enterprise realm and the way they decided to do it. At the same yeah. time, again, I could totally, this episode works so much better in that sense because, again, this episode is giving what a lot of fans wanted was an opportunity to have Archer and T'Pol be together. It legitimizes that there could be that branch of possibility that in the right scenario, that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, that's not where the writers are going, but they allow us to be able to have that in a storyline that is important because it does need to happen. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we're stuck in that time period, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
so their relationship even is then important in that. And so mm-hmm. All of that, I think, is so well done. And it's one of those things where I think people in Voyager would have been much happier if they had a story like this where it actually basically gave people what they wanted, but then allowed you to kind of come back and not necessarily even hitting this reset button, but it's like, okay, we're not going down that road, but you got what you wanted, mm-hmm. which is, you know, Chakotay and Janeway had a relationship. And so mm-hmm. that's the thing that I find so interesting about this. I'm really glad that it appears here then, though, in Enterprise, because like you mentioned, I think it works great within mm-hmm. this Zindi context. And I think it works really well with these characters because there was always kind of a sense of, are these two characters going to get together in some way? Because that would be very interesting, especially for these two characters. And then, mm-hmm. you know, the kind of the moment that they start to, even in the first season, create avenues for Trip and T'Pol to get together. It's like they take that kind of almost Romeo and Juliet aspect, you know, and transfer it from Archer to Trip, and it works just as well because, you know, he has just as many reasons to kind of be angry with Vulcans as Archer does. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, again, this is a place where I think this really does work great. Mm-hmm. But I mean, personally, it kind of shows to me a little bit of the blindness for the Voyager writers.
Yeah. Well, the stories are different animals because, and I'm talking about the monkey again, but this is not exactly a love story on Enterprise, right? It's more a story of friendship. even though there is the implication that they've grown together, but the catalyst for it is T'Pol feeling like she needs to care for Archer. And then over the time they're together, they grow closer.
Sure. Yeah.
And also, it's a much richer premise because of the fact that Archer hated Vulcans so much and T'Pol was prejudiced against humans as well. And they had trouble working together initially, but then they have to come together. Whereas when you're dealing with Voyager, with Janeway and Chakotay, you're dealing with two humans. And yeah, you've got a Starfleet captain and a Maquis, but the Maquis guy was actually teaching at Starfleet Academy at one point. So it's a much more, it's a much shorter distance for them to come together, especially if they find themselves in a situation like they do in Resolutions, where maybe they have to depend on one another. But I think the real key to this story is that in either case, if you're going to go down this path, you need a way to cut it off and to bring it back. And so with Resolutions, they bring it back because they're actually able to get them off the planet again, and they can come back to the ship. So the timeline doesn't change. Everything moves forward. And that story is a situation where you can't leave them on the planet because it's in the middle of the second season. So who's going to be captain of this? Tuvok going to run the ship and Harry's going to be the first officer? Well, it just destroys the entire premise of the show in the second season. So you can't do that. So you'd have to write a story that allows you to reset things to keep the story moving forward. And in the case of Voyager, at that point, you would really have to fabricate some kind of story just to make that work. Whereas here, you've already got the story. Everything's already in motion, so you don't need to create anything. You can use the story that you're already telling as the path to resetting and keeping everything moving forward, while at the same time showing, like you said earlier, the importance of one person, Archer, to the survival of humanity. But you're also showing the importance of T'Pol to the survival of humanity, because if she doesn't care for Archer, they don't reach the point where Phlox finds a way to get rid of the parasites. So I think that while you could make it work as a Voyager story, it fits very naturally here. You don't need to force anything. You're basically given a perfect framework to tell this kind of story.
And one thing I just wanted to add, you know, I think what makes this episode great is that it actually works even better when you know season four, because of the way in which both Archer and T'Pol have such pivotal roles in, say, Vulcan history and the history of the Federation and all those type of things. So that really comes into play as well when you think about how key all of these characters are on the NX-01 and to creating the future that we are so familiar with. And so that's one of those places where it's like the episode actually even works better in retrospect.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned resetting. So let's talk about the reset button, hitting reset for a minute. Some fans have criticized the story because they see that Sussman is using a reset button. But I don't really see this episode as being the classic reset button that we sometimes feel is an easy way out for the writers, because in this case, what's being done is being done for a few reasons that necessitate going back to the starting point of the story. So it's not like Voyager's Year of Hell, where I've always felt like they should have had to deal with the consequences of the encounters they had with the Krenim. That would have made an interesting show afterwards, instead of everything being fine. But here, the story, first of all, as I mentioned earlier, it's encapsulating the entire Zindi conflict and the possible outcome where Earth is destroyed. Because up to this point, we don't really know what's going to happen. We know that the Zindi are building a weapon that they hope they can use to destroy Earth, but we don't know if they'll succeed. And being shown that they do succeed in one timeline really makes the urgency of everything that we're going to be seeing from here on out all the more important and critical and exciting. And the other thing is that, as we've been talking about, Archer is very important. And this isn't the first time that we're going to be shown that Archer is the linchpin to history, essentially, with what's happening with this conflict. But when Phlox finally tests out the treatment that they've developed, and they just drop in, Sussman drops in this little line about Phlox shows the images of Archer's brain and shows that when we kill the parasites in the present, we also kill them in the past. And as a Star Trek viewer, you don't question like, oh, well, how does that work? You think, oh, yeah, I've seen this kind of stuff happen before on Star Trek. It makes sense, right? And by putting that in, you're not really hitting a reset button as the writer saying, well, you know, I wrote myself in a corner. I always give the example of, I don't remember what season it was, third or fourth season or fifth season of Desperate Housewives, where they wrote themselves into so many corners that they had a tornado come through and destroy the whole town. And then everyone wakes up the next season, doesn't remember what's happening, right? So it's nothing like that, right? It's the reset is actually critical to what the story is trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
They're not trying to get out of what they've done, but they're able to show us that growing relationship and foreshadow what's to come for T'Pol and Archer. And so I don't see it as a classic reset button at all. I think it's a very clever premise.
I mean, I think you nailed it. This is not a reset button. This is a important story to the saga.
Mm-hmm.
For Enterprise.
And maybe for Star Trek as a whole, because again, Archer is the president. Yep.
Yes. Yes, exactly. No, I think you've hit that on the head right there. And this is what makes this so important, is that we know how incredibly key all of these characters are going to be, especially in retrospect. But this, what's interesting is the way in which this story actually gives us a snippet, an idea of just how important Archer and T'Pol are to the future of all that we know. And we knew coming into Enterprise in the first place that they were telling us the history of what we understood as Star Trek.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore these characters were going to be important to that. How they're going to be important, we don't totally know, but this, again, really helps us start to understand how that's going to be the case. And so really, really like the way in which this is working out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, again, it's just one of those places where they just do a really good job of helping us to get that. And this is one of the areas where the episode is succeeding, because I don't feel in any way, shape, or form that this is a reset button. What I feel is I feel the emotion of this from the actors. I feel the emotion of this for the characters, and I feel the emotion of this for the Star Trek story, especially when we think about the idea that we've killed most of humanity in this episode. And so really, again, everything does hang in the balance. And how are we going to get out of this? And, you know, I think the other thing that also makes this really work is that it takes Phlox 12 years to figure mm-hmm. this out,
mm-hmm.
right? And so I think there's something really special to that as well, that they're not just making this feel easy. They're making this feel difficult. And so, yeah, I think it's a really good job on every front.
Yeah. So this episode has a lot of references in it to past Star Trek, to even Battlestar Galactica. We've got a ragtag fleet. I mean, it's actually the wording is used directly. Apparently, Sussman had read an early script before Battlestar Galactica reboot was actually produced, and that's what I've heard. But of course, he also references Star Trek II because in maybe a little bit of a sick joke, he takes the 6,000 people who survive the destruction of Earth and he resettles them on SETI Alpha 5, a planet that will become uninhabitable in 100 years.
Oh, this is SETI Alpha 5? Guys, not a place you want to be. Any other planet would do.
Thankfully, T'Pol's cooking up like a nice American Southern breakfast and not SETI eels for
this is true. This
Archer
is true.
To munch on in the morning.
It's a much nicer place. I actually just love all of those little references because I think that's one of those things where Sussman kind of understands this. If you know, you know. But if you don't know, it doesn't take anything away from the story, and you're actually not really missing anything, mm-hmm. right? And that's where those type of winks and nods and little bits of fan service and or just Easter eggs, mm-hmm. that's how you do those well. And so, because really the most important part of this is not to take away from the larger story that's being told, you know, with these characters and all. And so I'm just really thankful that, and this is the place where I think I would give the most credit to Sussman, is that he truly understands the way in which to tell a story that winks and nods at different things without in any way, shape, or form taking away from the actual core tenets of this story that are most important for you, even as a super fan, to latch on to.
Yeah, yeah. And when you use a species like the Iridians, which we all know, and we know what they do, but our crew here has never encountered them, you make sure that, A, it makes sense for them to be the ones that you're using in the story, as information dealers, first of all, right. So you're not just like randomly grabbing a species to show that you know something about Star Trek, which happens in a lot of the newer series. But also, you make sure to include a line from the characters themselves that shows, well, we didn't know who these aliens were. We had to look them up. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that kind of attention to detail also, I think, is important and also really makes the story fit well.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. All right. So, well, any final thoughts on this story? And what's your rating on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to surprise anybody that it gets top marks. This is an absolute 5 out of 5 dimensional parasites in Archer's brain. This knocks it out of the park. And it's so well done. It's an episode that I also love of this season because it is one that you can just watch at any time without having to watch the entire season. So they found a way to kind of create one of those type of episodes. And in many ways, you know, this is one of those episodes that kind of gets closest to the episodes that we all kind of talk about in Star Trek, like The Visitor. Or Inner Light, where you're really doing a lot for the characters. And in many ways, I think it's funny because as I was watching the episode, I mean, really, this is just the Star Trek notebook. If you've ever read Nicholas Sparks' book, The Notebook, you know, the husband of a woman who is in a long-term care facility because she's, you know, not well enough to be on her own. She has dementia. And so every day he spends his day reading a diary to her and telling her the story of how they met and who they are and how they came together. And that's kind of what T'Pol has been doing for the last, you know, 12 years. And so, yes, the fact that they kind of found a way to actually tell a romantic love story between these two characters in that way and still make it action-packed, incredibly interesting. The episode looks great, too. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, look, there are so many superlatives that this episode can be given, but it's just one of my favorite episodes of Enterprise in the first place. So that's where I land. How about you, Chris?
Yeah, you mentioned that it's action-packed, and one thing that I would just note about this episode is that when a lot of time goes by and I haven't watched it, when I think back to it, I always think about T'Pol Archer on SETI Alpha 5, and so my brain groups it into the bottle shows or shows like you mentioned, like The Inner Light and The Visitor and so forth. But there's so much stuff going on here. It must have been a very expensive episode to produce. It's not at all a bottle show, but the format of it feels that way a little bit because it's this recounting to Archer of what had happened over 12 years and why he can't remember things. And I think it's a very, very effective story. And so I'm going to give this one 10 screenings of Rosemary's Baby, including one which happens in sickbay on an iPad. I love that T'Pol basically brings him an iPad and like, hey, so you know, funny. I know you can't join us for the big screen, but here you go. You can just watch it on your tablet in bed, like the way in which so many people watch things these days in our own world.
Hey, Chris, by the way, could you bring me another pillow and maybe you know, turn the lights down a little bit?
Somehow that scene, I thought of Kirk and Spock, you know, like Kirk asking for a little something and Spock, are you good now? You need something else?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I agree.
Felt a bit like that to me. So, so there we go. We'd love to hear your thoughts on Twilight. There are many ways for you to share those with us. Perhaps the easiest way is to join the Babel Conference on Facebook. That's our listeners group. It's there to extend the conversations beyond the podcasts. If you're joining for the first time, please do answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. You'll find a post for this episode there on the timeline, and you can share your thoughts with Matthew and me and fellow listeners right there. You can also send us email, go to our website, trek.fm/contact, use the form you find there, choose to send to a show and choose Warp 5, and that will come to Matthew and me through the Mutara Nebula this time. Saval, make sure it gets to us that way.
And I mean, will he though? He's kind of a turd.
Yeah, he is. I think he's probably going to just sit on the messages and never send them. But anyway, you can hope. Maybe T'Pol will get through to him. And of course, you can find us everywhere in social media. Our username is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we'd love to get that from you as well. Now, Matthew, when you're not stabbing lizards with tiny statues of Zefram Cochran, where can people find you?
Well, I always love that statue. See if I can find the bronze maker to make me a new one.
It's lucky that he's pointing up into the sky, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You can find me all over the place under social media under the name MattRushing02. Of course, you can also find me here on the network outside all the great Star Trek talk with the 602 Club, where we talk about all of those other franchises we love. So check out that. And then I am over on the Nerd Party with a couple of shows. You can find me on Owlpost talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series. And then you can find me over on Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we are talking about Star Wars each and every week. But, you know, Chris, when you're not trying to figure out just exactly how you can get T'Pol to make you breakfast every morning, where can we find you?
Yeah, I'm going to make sure she knows how to make some good biscuits and gravy. Hard to get those in Japan.
Maybe some grits.
And some grits. Yeah, yeah. Grits, by the way, that's the one thing, if I can ever get into the commissary on the U.S. military bases here.
Nice.
Buying grits. Yeah.
That's understandable. They're delicious.
Anyway, you can find me elsewhere on the network doing those shows with you, of course. And you can find me in many shows in the back catalog. You can also find me everywhere on social media. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. And I'd love to chat with you there about Star Trek or whatever. And if you would like to help us keep this rewatch and everything that we're doing on the network going, we could definitely use your help. To find out how to support the network, please visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. We would not be here without your support. So thank you to everyone who is supporting the network now. Well, Matthew, grab your cowboy hat, because we're going to be going on down to a western town to talk about North Star next time.
Well, yeehaw, Chris. Let's go.